with the audio visual arts. The current project that's being featured here, as most of you know very well, is Forte, a magazine of sound. And Catherine and Georgia here are two of the editors of the magazine. There's one other editor, Jacqueline, who's in India.
Azerbaijan.
Devoted herself
to journalism.
Yes, she devoted herself to politics and journalism over there. So she's
not traveling.
She's not here.
Yeah, she's not here right now. When the three of us were kind of talking about featuring the magazine here and trying to just kind of draw more attention to the magazine and expose it, just because of a lot of the unique and kind of interesting things that it's providing, we thought it might be interesting to have a panel discussion with the editors and also with the contributors, some of which are here today, and just kind of open it up to the public and inform people of the magazine and kind of have a discussion about its origin and talk about ways of it developing.
The starting point for me was when Georgia approached me, I guess, in March of 2009. Georgia and Jackie had already had a conversation, and Georgia's idea was, I want to do a magazine format, but in sound. And from there, we began to have meetings in March of 2009. Mm-hmm. The three of us, which started out actually at Artist Space, was generous enough to loan us their back room for meetings. And we really had no idea where we were going, other than we wanted this very strict magazine format, which is the idea of, you know, reviews, a travel portion, essays. So somehow being, you know, the difference we were seeing between ourselves and radio is that it was a theme that pieces could revolve around. So like a magazine, there would be different sections, instead of in a radio show sense where it would be episodic. We were thinking of it, each piece is a sort of individual nodule within the larger whole. But also in the essence of, you know, when you listen to Forte, you hear a description of a cover, you hear the description of images, and this is all given to you by audio instead of having a visual character. So that's where we started from, and then we developed the first issue around a theme, and started sort of researching and looking for contributors, a lot of people that we knew who had already been interested, and that was the beginning of it.
I want to to talk a little bit about the details of the first. The beginning of our conversations was also including ideas of unapologetic intellectualism, mm-hmm. Which was really important for us to start the magazine, not just because of the format idea, like just to translate a magazine into audio, or mm-hmm. to think only the format, but through these ideas of unapologetic, that though this kind of this issue gave a step to decide to have this kind of format. I mean, and also that we were talking about in terms of why sound and why we choose that format to make a magazine in a very in a world that everything is kind of everything is visual.
It's also with that, it was to reveal the character of the people who were actually composing the pieces.
Yeah.
So there's something of the character of the human voice that's captured within the writing.
Yeah.
And the narration of the writing that's different from reading it, because you give it your own voice when you read a text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The continuum of like the sound, and in connection also with the internet and be available to download and becoming a material for use is also something that interests us in the idea of sound. Then become already known a magazine that is for use. It was very interesting to us because of its format and because it was available through the internet. Because there are examples of magazines, sound magazines, or attempts of sound magazines to exist through DVD or through CDs, which we are avoiding, or we don't really, because we had people even on the first launch of the magazine saying, "Oh, are we going to copy CDs?" And we're like, no, we don't want to copy. We don't
podcast
want to copy CDs.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of flickering materiality, immateriality.
Also, it is a broadcast, you know, in a sense, instead of having an object form.
Yeah.
So we were hoping to keep it very simple in that way. And also, you know, use the advantage of podcast subscription where people could receive it like any other radio program or podcast subscription that would arrive to them when the issue is released, much like a publication, but then avoiding the necessity of the object.
Yeah. At the same time, where we find us in a way in difference with radio is that we don't have any. We don't attempt for the informational aspect of radio in a way that we don't run after the current things that are going on, and we're not thinking also that the magazine is a city magazine, but it's not a New York based magazine. It's an open magazine, and we kind of trying to make links in different cities, in different areas. We're trying to make links between kind of people that are not in an arena of, let's say, informative writing, but that we want also like weird, I don't know, ways of
interpreting
not only text but the world, what is going on around, you know.
Well, a lot of this had to do with, you know, a lot of the contributors recorded on a site that was relevant to the piece, and therefore sort of capture the ambient sound of the location, which was very important to us because we allowed them the option to do a sort of straight studio recording, but we hoped and we're very fortunate that I think most of them tried to pick a site that was specific to this and incorporate the audio somehow, or incorporate the notion of the place that they are recording into it. And this became especially important for, you know, some of the pieces, like having a travel section. We were very interested in the idea of travel and having something from elsewhere come into the publication.
Or the travel as a kind of imaginary travel, creating a sound field where the writer is also able to create a kind of imaginary soundtrack where he can put his words on top of that background, or be able to think of that in conjunction to the text, which is kind of weird, you know. Sometimes you, I don't know, I think of the writer most of the time just like writing. And then when we have a conversation with the contributors, it's very funny because we're getting along to all these kind of recipes of, oh, well, how it will sound, you know, like, and it's not a lot of times that you think of that when you're shuffling a magazine, like
no.
a visual magazine, you know.
Because everything's provided for you.
Yeah, everything is kind of provided.
And that is part of what, when we're talking about the images, or the way that we dealt with magazine format, is that George and I, alternating in the first two issues, composed the images that are interspersed in between the contributions. And our idea was that we would describe something that would, you know, give the viewer a sense of an image, but in that sense, you know, they're not seeing this thing as in a print magazine. They are being given the image as an audio.
Mm.
So
In that, I wanna add something that how we think of an image when you know, I mean, what we have when I hear the word image, I'm like, what is the image? I mean, like, okay, how you can describe an image? Because when we, I think, in my kind of view, is like. That describing an image is not only what I have in front of me or what I see, but is also what surrounds me. So then the translation of that image, and I totally saw that in your images too, which is great.
It's not a literal
translation,
yeah,
of an image that is in front of you, but is a surrounding and infiltrating of what is going on, and then all this other stuff that's going on when you're describing something, and it's such a weird situation there. And I think it's good for a sound magazine to bring those aspects, you know, bring those aspects of what an image is. Because it's able to do through the format, through the sound, I think so. Yeah.
One of the things that I think is really kind of interesting that maybe we can talk about a little bit. This is the first
for
issue.
That first issue, total duration 1 hour and 53 minutes.
I love that. It's like 1 hour and 53 minutes is like, when people hear that, they're like, what?
That's why we didn't put it on the second issue. We didn't put total duration. Because
no warning.
No more warnings, you know?
Yeah.
Because also, like, time, I mean, you can't say to someone, like, oh, total duration, 1 hour, why? Because the good with them having like the magazine as a concrete thing, like the track, is that you can use it as much as you want, and you can listen it the way you want it. So it cannot have a total duration.
Right.
It cannot say, oh, okay, it's 1 hour. What is the 1 hour? Well, when it starts, I mean,
yeah.
Now.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, that's the idea, is to have, well, you have the flexibility, like you're saying, to shuffle throughout it the same way that if you had a print magazine, you can kind of access it whenever you want and just flip to whatever section you like.
Well, I think something else I'm thinking about is the, you know, the difference is the type of concentration that sound requires versus a reading of a text is very, very different. Because I think when you're listening to a text, you're sort of meandering in and out of the, you know, sounds and the words. So at some point you can concentrate on the sound and the quality of voice, and other times you're concentrating on the words and the content. And you're using a completely different sensibility when you're doing audio and listening to audio than when you're reading a text. And that's something I found very interesting every time I re-listen to both the first and second issue, which I've been doing a lot over the course of this week. It's a very different experience for me, even having, you know, with Georgia put together the contributions and having read some of them as text coming from people when they were sending drafts. It's a completely different experience to have the sound, because it's sort of encompassing you. It's giving you a different spatiality. Because I think with your hearing, you think of space. You're somehow refracting space by listening. Where reading, it's a very directed and, you know, sort of, it has a specific space, which goes back to time. I think with reading, you think a lot less about time than with audio, because audio, you know, this idea of duration is a lot more present than when you're reading a text. You don't you often don't think text. You know, this book took me 2 weeks and 3 months to read over the course of 5 minutes at a time. So it's kind of, that's another thing I think is really interesting about the translation.
Yeah, but it's also the breaking of this internal voice of when you're reading a text, which is weird. I mean,
yes,
what are you doing? What are
exactly.
you doing with this kind of that you are so used reading a text, reading it through your internal voice, and then you have now another voice telling you. There is a situation there which is very, very interesting. You allow yourself not to have this internal voice,
mm-hmm.
and give space to this other voice to tell you this text.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird fracture there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you still have the ability to think through the text while you're reading, like while you're hearing. But you just stop this kind of internal voice, which is everywhere, you know?
Do you
want to
open up to questions?
Yeah, sure.
Have?
I just have like a quick comment to make. I did the audio editing for the first couple issues. And I think that I've been thinking about the question of how it's separate from a magazine on one hand and how separate from a radio show on the other hand. And like, if you set up the two poles, one being somebody, the audiobook of, you know, this month's issue of Time, and the other side being an hour-long radio essay or a news broadcast or something, besides the difference in content and it not being current events mostly, while there are in Forte field recordings and interviews and the kind of things that you often see in radio shows, it's like 75% of it tends to be authors reading material that they have written.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, it's like a magazine article. And yet, the style of these authors, in terms of their recording style and in terms of their reading style, is so much more idiosyncratic and so much more focused on like the particularities of their voice and where they're recording and any other kind of interferences that are coming in from the setting, whether they're artificial or they're from the, like they're from the surroundings. Like, for example, there's Sarah Dedrick's piece that's in both issues, where she wrote like a really straightforward history essay, and then she reads it at the Philosophical
Society
in the stairwell,
yeah.
And you hear everyone walking around the Philosophical Society in her.
You hear the docents sort of like joking with each other and giving tours,
and her voice bouncing off the marble everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and then, so it's more like somebody reading a magazine, but somebody reading a magazine in this very special, really idiosyncratic way.
Like out loud in public for you.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Like someone reading to you in a really special
yeah,
setting,
exactly.
in a really
in a
special way.
Place, yes.
Well, the fact that it's in a location like that actually makes it like radio, because that's what radio very often does. It goes to a location and does a reportage from there.
Right.
But what she's reading has nothing to do with radio.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. She's reading an article.
This gets to the
yeah,
root
yeah.
of the
yeah.
combination we were looking for.
Yeah.
I think when we started talking about this project, we wanted that marriage of this sort of, you know, these people we know that are great writers and their idiosyncratic styles and voices coming across in radio. Yeah, this is exactly sort of, I think, the pivotal point of...
Well, I think the author's voice gives an authenticity. You know, I do a lot of work with people in the audiobook industry as consultant, but I must admit, when I look at my own audiobooks, almost always I only get the ones that are read by the author, because I somehow feel that authenticity is important there. And you do get a sense, even though they may not be professional readers, you get a sense of the voice, whether you talk about internal voice, you get a sense of their voice.
Their internal voice. Yeah.
But the other thing you mentioned that I might want to expand upon, you see, you talked about, and I unfortunately haven't had the opportunity to listen to this yet, because I didn't know about it a short time ago today, is that you talked about visual description. Yeah, I've also done a lot of work as a consultant in the organizations that work with the Visual Handicap in England,
mm-hmm.
the Dog Was Trust, and they do a lot of things, you know, aimed, and I wrote an article for their book, Another Eyesight, on how sound can be used to create visual experience. And I would think this is a community you'd want to reach out to with this publication. I mean, it'll advertise, you know, the other website and all, because I would think a lot of people who are visually handicapped would find the visual content of the, you know, of the oral visual content, however you want to call it, important, because it isn't just somebody telling a story.
Yeah. We were talking about that.
Do you have minutes here?
Yeah, I'm just taking a couple notes.
Not surprised. Well,
No, I was just gonna say I'm one of the contributors, and I've been talking with them a little bit. And we actually were talking about the visually impaired and how it relates to other formats that are available as it is now through,
Yeah, and also the how you treat the piece before the editing, how you listen to the piece, and then how you can edit. And I think Lev can also come into this conversation about, you know, the editing of audio is such a weird and delicate procedure, and I think it makes and also the recordings themselves are they're creating this kind of character. So it's also the media, you know, it's in with which microphone you recorded, what day was, if it was windy.
I think these variations are really important too, because often, I mean, this is the other thing when we were talking about, you know, allowing and asking contributors to record their own piece, though we help edit together in the end and set the levels so you can hear people, you know, you can actually hear what they're saying. But I think it's important that there's a character that the contributors develop on their own with the recording. And this comes back into, you know, the radio. Like, there's a certain flatness and a certain type of production that's a standard. You know, we have someone who does professional audio editing, fortunately, helping us, but we didn't want it to be that standard of radio where you have to record things in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So we like that there's, you know, some, again, using the term idiosyncratic things happening, but it is nice that part of the character ends up being the things that intrude themselves on the text within the recording, wherever it may be.
Mm-hmm. That works again toward the point you were making about having many voices around a topic. So you literally have many voices around a topic, versus in radio you have a group of producers producing a voice for, you know, a few people or one person.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or the idea of a host, you know, our though Georgia's voice is the, you know, I think it was important, we decided early on that she should always read the cover and the images, because having a consistent voice for that seemed important, so that it was clear that that was something that would be consistent throughout the issues, that there would be this voice describing the images for you.
And it's also because I don't speak English. It's not my native language.
Which is part of the reason it gives it makes Forte a specific Jordan's voice becomes.
But it's like a font or something, you know.
Especially
if somebody leaves the New Yorker magazine open, you know it's New Yorker without looking at the cover because of the font. It's the same idea. This becomes
your
the font for the magazine.
It has much more of a feeling of being the layout of the magazine, your voice, than it does of being a host. You're not like hiring the song. The not only the quality of your voice, but speaking of the editing process. And how it's different from some of my other experiences is the pace of the issues is much more, it's much slower, and it's much more, like, you allow for much more open space in the transitions between pieces and also the pieces themselves. It's got a very specific layout to it as a sound magazine.
Which is also, you know, I mean, let's not say, like, everything's great.
I think one thing that was nice from the beginning is that we knew, you know, not just because of limitations, but also I think philosophically what we believe in as artists and as writers and as makers, that we wanted something that could evolve and that could allow for more people to be involved. And as this project grows, that will allow for more stability and for different types of things to happen. But, you know, the basics, the skeleton will remain the same, which is the things like George's voice or, you know, the magazine format.
I mean, sometimes maybe there's nothing.
Silence. We could
totally
just
do an hour of silence.
Yeah, like
the sound barriers. I think it's Lopez or something. He produced a CD once and had so little sparse and so low level sounds that the pressing company wrote back and said, "Oh, you accidentally sent us a tape with nothing on it." Legitimately, the piece.
Maybe we could talk a minute about the themes.
Sure.
So I'm really excited about the next issue, but let's talk about maybe the first two issues.
Yeah.
The first issue, the theme being
value, and the second issue was time travel. Which,
value didn't end up being value, no. Because everybody wanted to write about love and sex. And
I think value is a term, though. I mean, I'm thinking about Sarah's piece because her piece is also about love, but in this really funny, you know, it's about these sort of letters to Meriwether Lewis.
Yeah.
And you hear her say the word value, and value is taken in a sense of like intellectual and personal value.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the first issue, so many of the pieces revolve more around personal value,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
in this way, like sexual, romantic value. And it was a completely different thing that we had expected to get back when we put out the theme value to this. And
but
I think
we didn't really do anything to avoid it.
No, I think we left it open because we decided we liked the pieces so much, and they did hit on value in not the way we expected, but...
What did you expect?
I think we expected more economic.
Yeah, well, I think everybody's avoiding that, right?
Yeah.
That would be like,
in that sense, I feel like I was reticent with economic because I was, like, scared that it was going to be too much of a... depressive and like a reiteration of what we already find ourselves in. And I think that what we got back from the contributors was a much broader and much more
fresh.
Heartfelt and
fresh
great
idea of
value.
I guess we'll do questions now.
Sure, I just want to ask a very general question of who decides those themes and how are they like communicated to potential contributors?
Well, with Georgia and I decided the first themes together. I think value was more something that she had thought of that knew more. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I felt a little less prepared. Time travel was one that I sort of felt more prepared for. So we talk about the themes together, and then somehow it's out of maybe what we're currently reading or interested in, maybe certain trends we've seen. With both, you know, the first and second issue, there was a certain maybe set of contributors. Some were total strangers. Some are, I'd say a majority, especially because we're just starting out, a majority are people we already know or tried to know or, you know, reached out, sort of know tangentially.
Or they want us
people,
to know.
Or they want us to know.
To know.
But we had like a list, and we actually did, I think we solicited about double the amount of people that we heard back from. And then those that we heard back from, I'd say a third of those ended up actually composing pieces. So we actually over solicited in both cases. And this is because, I mean, I've worked in print publications, and I worked on about two or three publications before this, and I learned early on that you over solicit because or else you're really short on content. And I just knew that, you know, about half the people would, you know, say we want to do the next issue or I can't do this in time. And actually that already happened where some people that we solicited from the first issue came back for the second, or we have a few people now that are lined up for the future who are interested in either contributing again or, you know, who we solicited initially and didn't have the time, and that will come back in the future.
But if one is interested in being considered, how would one know the themes in advance so that one could know what to put?
The idea is that we want people to email us, you know, through the info site. And I think that if someone was genuinely interested, we would just tell them the theme. You know, it's not the kind of thing where we're trying to exactly hide the theme,
mm-hmm.
but we don't want to publish the theme on the website, I think,
mm-hmm.
as like a...
We don't want to put that on the cover. We don't want to put the theme on the cover. because then it already gives a
it closes off the experience.
The other thing I was thinking.
Right about that is, I think it was a really smart decision on your guys' part not to include the theme in the issue, though to have it as the prompt for the contributors, because I think that the wide interpretation of value or time travel has been one of the really nice things about it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think that if I picked up the issue or downloaded the podcast and I was like, ooh, this one's time travel, I'd be like, what the hell? Like, one of these pieces was about time travel.
There's
really
no time machines here.
But, yeah, exactly. Like, I was really hoping for one thing. And yet, like, obviously the theme helps, like, secretly tie it together and give it, like, a cohesion. But
I think when the theme is not, you know, directly pushed on people, then when they listen to the whole thing and then hear about the theme, or they maybe figure out there's some kind of strange cohesion, it's like a, I mean, I think of it the same way when you're experiencing any kind of, you know, reading or artwork. You don't want someone, I mean, I don't, I mean, I read literary criticism and I also have read art criticism, but I like to experience the thing myself sometimes
before
I'm told how to experience
it.
You know, because then sometimes when you're told how to experience it, it automatically gives you a mode on how to look at the thing.
Well, that's actually very in keeping with the idea of the images only being spoken, because with the speaking of the images, the burden is on the listener to kind of draw the image and you know, create an image, which is, and there's no conclusive or definitive image to refer to.
Yeah.
And in the same way with the theme, if there's no, you know, it's on the burden again is on the listener to work out what, or to not work out what the theme is, but to work through that anyway. And I think that is kind of characteristic of the whole project, that that there isn't a definitive end or you know, a Platonic construct of what of what's going on. And the whole thing becomes, you know, a very voluntary, a very involved kind of experience for the user.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is
very much our fantasy
board.
Yeah, I was thinking something
about
but let's continue.
Well, I think we've kind of addressed a lot of the things that we're interested in talking about for this particular discussion.
Yeah.
I guess one of the thought that I had, which is also, you know, it's kind of a just a general question, is did this develop for you guys because you were looking for something like that, because you felt that there was a lack of sound being explored in this manner, or was it just what prompted it, I guess, initially, or did it just kind of happen? It just kind of like all of a sudden it just surfaced.
Georgia, like, I'm pretty sure the way it started was Georgia, like, woke up one day and was like, I want to make a sound magazine. And then Georgia was like, who would do this with me? And I think she means, was like, who is of the same idiosyncratic nature, but also, I think that that's, you know, it just started with that. And when Georgia approached me, I had already worked on publications, and I felt a certain disinterest in working on that type of publication. And a lot of the works that the slideshow I was doing at the time you approached me, I was doing a slideshow performance where I was reading text I had written, and half of it was pre-recorded, half of it was live. So I was sort of interrupting myself during the course of this lecture. Mm-hmm. Georgia, at the same time, was also working on very similar things, where she does a lot of speaking while she's performing.
Yeah, but also I had this idea, and then I was like, oh my God, like, it's gonna be another art project. It's kind of boring. So I was like, I thought, okay, this should be like a, it should be a magazine in a way that it won't involve the art circle. It will be more open, and it will be like for anybody, and it will.
It's not an art piece.
It's not an art piece, exactly. And I was very interested in this idea as well when Georgia proposed that to me, because I thought, okay, well, we'll probably have a lot of artists who are contributors, which we did. But then again, you know, there's contributors that both of us know who are non-artists, that we were really excited about working with, because their ideas and their voices and their texts were something maybe that influences our individual artistic practice. Mm-hmm. But it's a completely, yeah, it's not, it is a magazine and it is a sound project, but it's not like an art piece in that way.
And none of the contributors, I mean, like, though many of the contributors are artists, very few of the contributions are sound art. In any way that's recognizable.
Yes.
Like, it seems like only the 90-second piece is at the end.
The 90-second piece was the place where we wanted to allow for that. That's actually why we had... The 90-second piece is functions in a magazine, how you have a back page. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always this back page that's like more of a free-for-all. So we thought that would be the place for people to make something that was sound art-ish and not magazine-ish in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it would also allow for a... For any kind of interpretation of what
the
theme, you know, the theme, but also like what someone is thinking of, what sound can be in a sound magazine,
which
is kind of reverse, you know.
It's like a poem.
Yeah, it's a contribution to a sound magazine through sound. Experimentation is a kind of a perverse idea of a back page, you know.
Actually, Lev was our recent back page contributor,
which
was interesting because he'd been doing sound editing this whole time and he really wanted to do the 90-second back page with his filmmaking partner. And to me, that's really interesting, is that they're filmmakers by day, you know, by night, they make sound art for
everybody. I was thinking something else about the internet. I wanted to talk
about
about what it is to have the magazine on the internet.
Yeah.
And also how we're trying to find a good way to present the magazine and to make the website and the web design, and how that is really determines how you put yourself there to listen to the magazine. And we're trying to figure out ways of how the website will be and how we're going to design, we continue kind of developing the website. And
the challenge is kind of
how do you set up a
platform or just a website that enables a visitor to arrive there and just really be able to kind of lock into
the project,
magazine, into the project, into the sound, and not be distracted by any other you know.
Well, that's the difficulty. In a sense, websites are largely, even though they have sound and, you know, moving image often now, but we've had a really difficult time with that, figuring out how to focus on the audio while still maintaining a clarity for people coming to visit the site.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that the way that people are used to looking at the internet and websites is, you know, in the visual sense.
Yeah. And
so
this
is a challenge that we're
working on. Yeah,
and
I think it's also a very kind of a... There is a kind of a negativity there, because at the same time we want a website, but we present a website that tells you don't look at the screen.
Look
at somewhere else. Listen.
So,
go for a walk. Put your headphones. You know.
It's really interesting to me because a lot of lit mags right now. Well, not a lot. There's really only like
jazziness,
two.
Right.
Yeah. There's like two lit mags that have devoted themselves to the internet, and this is new because everybody, you know, the thing among writers is, oh, nobody's reading anymore. Oh, everybody's just on the internet. So they've developed like Electric Literature and Wags Review, I think, were like the first two to develop specifically for electronic media. And the image, of course, is so important for them. And more important than it would be in a printed form. There is art in lit mags, but it's like in the middle section. Otherwise, it's very
it's
like
more
straight
austere
text.
Usually.
Yeah.
When there's art in lit mags, it tends to be something that's austere that lends itself to what's going on, or it can be tangential, or
right.
Often like you know, any printed matter where you have images, it's something else to like anchor yourself to.
Right.
Where I think when with the web, people, I'm going to use the word jazzy for the
time,
but jazzy is like
hip, trendy.
There's a thing that people keep doing, and I think we definitely want to avoid the jazziness side of.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I think
you've covered that word.
I think especially with the sound. People think of sound as a decoration on a website. They don't think of it as content. Unless they're really terrible speakers. I mean, what I do in my office, to be perverse, is I hide really high quality speakers that nobody can see. So when they bring up sound, all of a sudden, where did the sound come from? You know, it's really quality. And the... But it's because most people don't expect sound to be anything other than this buzzy little stuff out of little tiny speakers
on
your computer. So they don't, now they have to expect in advance to go and say, well, I want to hear your good headphones or good loudspeakers. But because in the rethinking of sound, not as a decoration to something else, but as the content, I think is what makes yours, you know, somewhat different than a lot of websites that also include sound.
Where this is the focal point.
And then also, of course, the internet is just kind of a conduit in a way. It's a place for somebody to access the issue and then take it with them, either in a portable format or something like that. It's not meant for... Yeah, the site isn't a place for people to hang out and, like, click around, you know.
It's not a chat room.
Yeah, it's not a chat room. You can chat somewhere else. No. But I was thinking about the downloading the magazine. I think I said it before that there's this, you know, of course, when you're starting something like that, I mean, my first fantasy about it is like, in some point, we're going to start listening to interpretations or like cutoffs of the magazine in like
mixes
and unauthorized collages, you know.
End up in like a little
Wayne song.
Yeah.
You go to a club and you're pregnant.
That would be, that's my kind of,
that's
my
fantasy.
But I think the fact that it plays continuously is a strength. So often audio, I mean, you can also do other things, or if you're traveling, you listen to headphones, where often these websites where you have click on this for 2 minutes and click on this for 1 minute something, then you feel you got to sit at your computer all the time. And I don't think that is necessarily a great, you know, even if the acoustics are good, it's not a great posture, it's not a great environment to sit with a mouse in your hand while you're listening. So I do think that I like the idea of the continuous screen. Because you can always interrupt it if you have to use a mouse,
but you
can leave it on, or, you know, or like audiobooks too, you can use it for traveling or driving and stuff.
I also enjoy that about it, because I mean, in the day I work in an office and I listen to a lot of audio, and it's really wonderful for me to be able to do one thing while having this thing that's sort of giving me somewhere else to be in a headspace, you know? So I think it is nice to have the option of the continual instead of just having individual pieces that are constantly, you know, like you said, that you have to, like, engage, where we did take great care in editing it together and a placement. You know, how people listen to it is really their choice, but... You know, for those people who do want to listen to it in one long stream, it is nice, you know, or it is important to know that, I think especially Georgia and Lev took over this part of the publication more. They really, really spent a lot of time on where each piece went and, you know, how they fit together.
How
they overlay to
overlay the other.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are some details we need to work on the website though, because we would like to have like the contributors when you shuffle, you know, details, you know.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that we've spoken about is when you visit the site, at the bottom of the page is just like a long kind of strip that shows you the entire issue, and so eventually we're kind of talking about just having little kind of markers. To know
so
the different
sections.
So you
see,
like,
so it's still on track, but you can
but you can see
yeah,
where you are.
Yeah.
You can see where you are, so you can see, ah, oh, now it's the travel place.
Yeah.
You know, or when you see it on your iTunes, maybe we can, maybe
mm-hmm.
you can also see it, you know, like, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Now
they,
it's the travel place.
It's the streams. I mean, you like one would highlight, and then you
Yeah,
that's a great idea,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not exactly
and
sure
if you have any ideas of, you know,
yeah,
designing or
if you have any ideas for thumbnails
and replacing the spatial with the temporal, like then you know my piece is at 25:36, not age 48.
It's just important to us too.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting away from. I mean, you know, my Kindle doesn't have any page numbers on it, which can be very frustrating. It uses some sort of funny code, so you don't easily can't tell somebody. Well, if you own a Kindle, go to this page. You can give it this funny code. But the so I think you see we're going to gradually get away. Maybe our thinking is getting away from as we're
pages.
From yeah from this chunky thing of the book of the magazine turning and everything because we're seeing where we're getting streams. I mean the Kindle is a stream of text and this visual text and this is a stream of audio text. Yeah.
In light, you know, also our sense of space and time are changing a lot now because of.
Yeah, we don't just turn the page and about that.
Yeah, we don't turn the page and we're not thinking of time as one continuous stream anymore.
That's
so it is very
about pages and
yeah.
streams.
Yeah.
Did you guys have any other thoughts, George or Catherine?
I think that's maybe it until the next panel.
Yeah. Does anybody else have
what's
a
next
question?
Panel will be very interesting.
How about we do a nice? Would you like to read everyone the contributors' names?
Yeah.
So maybe we can do a thank you.
With the bad pronunciation. So for the issue one, contributors, Sarah Jedzik, Sresta Reed Premoth, Arlen Austin, Joseph Straub, Christine Rathselli, Tyler Coburn, Douglas Boatwright, Cara Benedetto, Cici Duchu, Jeffrey Perkins, Jennifer Pietschko, Amy Owen, Andrea Lopez, and Elizabeth Hirsch. For Forte Issue 2, contributors, Brian Clifton, Sarah Jedzik, Lev Kalman and Whit Horn, Elizabeth Gross, Cara Benedetto, Jennifer Pietschko, Thomas Torres Cordova, Sarah Tatsik,
and
who else?
That's it.
And, yeah. And audio, Lev Kalman and Justin Luke.
Thank you.